All right, everyone, as people do, welcome to the October 1st, 2019 work session for the Planning Commission. Attendance, the chair is here, the vice chair has an excused absence. Commissioner Bose?
Here.
Commissioner Landon?
Present.
Commissioner Bergen has an excused absence. Commissioner Gill?
Here.
And Commissioner McGinley?
Present.
Great. First of all, we have some handouts from Brenda, and if you could go ahead and explain what these are for and what they are.
So you have your binders for anything that's development code update, so those just go in there, and each time you have a meeting, then you'll get a tab with the materials in it, so. That's that, and then the updated meeting schedule. Make sure everyone gets a new copy of that, so. That's it.
Great, thank you. And on that meeting schedule, for October 7th, Commissioner Landon, October 14th, Commissioner Bergen, October 21st, Commissioner Gill, and October 28th, Commissioner Sherwood. That'll be October. Okay, we have one work session item today, which is the update to the update for the development code. And Mark Russ.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Commissioners. So I am before you tonight to give you an update on the progress we're making on the development code. A lot of what I'm going to be talking about tonight is new legislation dealing with middle housing required by the state and how that impacts the ongoing development code update project. I was last before you on July 2nd, so this is the quarterly update that was outlined in the original project schedule to keep you apprised of what's going on. And I'll just jump right into it. Some of you may have heard somewhat about House Bill 2001 or the Middle Housing Bill. It's been in the news and it's made some waves. I think I was actually just interviewed at the beginning of this week by one of the local news stations about it. So there's a lot in there. I'm going to talk about some of it. I'm going to gloss over a little bit of it and focus really on two of the primary provisions. But the bill does have difference in the regulations it's going to be requiring depending on the size of the cities. So it describes what are medium-sized cities, which, as you see on the slide, is population between 10,000 and 25,000. And then everything over 25,000 is a large city. So Springfield is considered a large city in terms of this legislation. Although 25,000 is a pretty small, large city in my mind, but anyway, we're subject to those large city provisions. So the two primary provisions I want to talk about that we as a large city are going to be subject to, there's two things going on. And the first is the legislation says we have to allow duplexes on every lot that allows a single family home that's residentially zoned. So it's underlined on the slide, but that every lot or parcel part of that provision is specific to this duplex requirement. Because the next requirement talks about all middle housing types, which you'll see is defined there as that list of different housing types, includes duplexes, but also triplexes, fourplexes, cottage clusters, and townhomes. So all of those middle housing types have to be allowed in not all areas, but in areas that allow single family homes. So basically nobody really knows exactly what that term area means. It's not defined in the legislation, and it'll likely have to be determined through the required rulemaking process that's required by the legislation, and that will be ongoing through the end of this year into the beginning of next year, that rulemaking process. If it doesn't get specified or defined in the rulemaking process, it'll likely have to be come out of case law once cities start implementing this. But we anticipate that to be at least clarified. And I know our assistant city attorney has looked into that term, how it's been used in past legislation or past statutes and kind of in different contexts, what it means. And I don't know if you want to briefly mention that.
Yeah, in other areas of law, the term area zoned for residential use in the context of an annexation statute or an exclusive farm use in a lot of, or forest use for a lot of county regulations, basically just means in an exclusive farm use zone or in a residential zone. And they don't typically say in a residential zone because people have thought over the semantics of what you label a zone and try to create loopholes by creative naming. So I would expect that the regulations would reflect that, but the legislative affairs person for the League of Oregon Cities wasn't super confident that using the exact same language that is used in these other areas of statute was intentionally done to give the exact same meaning. So there could be nuances there. But it's likely to mean for us that we have to allow them in some locations in our LDR, MDR, and HDR, in those three residential zones. And then I think they make exceptions for areas that are primarily zoned for commercial or industrial use, which would exempt out, even though we allow some single family in rare circumstances in those other zones, we wouldn't have to require duplexes there.
So the legislation does give cities the ability to regulate siting and design standards for all these middle housing types. So figuring out exactly what that looks like will be a lot of the work for me in integrating these new legislative concepts into the Development Code Update project. Some of the parameters loosely around what these siting and design standards can involve are that, first of all, they can't be cause unreasonable cost or delay. They can't discourage all middle housing types in an area. And they're subject to the already existing provisions of for housing that they will be required to be clear and objective standards. So all of that said, figuring out how to allow duplexes on every lot and allow all the other middle housing types in the areas will be, you know, that right sizing of our standards that we've talked about in the past and how we want to integrate those into existing areas. Let's see. Make sure I'm not skipping over. So I'm going to go over quickly the other provisions that are contained in the legislation, but those, the two provisions, the duplexes and the middle housing types, are the primary ones I'm going to come back to and talk more about and how we're going to integrate those into the Development Code Update process. So some of the other provisions that are contained in House Bill 2001, it talks about when we adopt the regulations for our implementing this into our code and could include comprehensive plan amendments. The city must also consider ways to increase affordability. It lists specifically waiving or deferring SDCs, property tax exemptions, and construction tax. Now when it says, so those must be considered, it doesn't say any of them have to be implemented, but and what exactly that looks like will have to be determined as we move forward. There's also a provision in there that prevents new CCNRs from being established on property that would prohibit the middle housing types. And it talks about prohibit or unreasonably restrict middle housing types and ADUs. So there might be existing subdivisions that have CCNRs, and a real simple one could be that only one dwelling unit is allowed per lot in an existing single family neighborhood or something like that. We don't, as a city, enforce CCNRs. That's private contractual relationships between property owners. But this legislation specifically says that new development cannot have CCNRs that prevent that. This is a little bit of a nuanced provision, but there is a provision in there that talks about limiting density increase assumptions to a 3% maximum, unless you can show otherwise with kind of more hard data that it should be different. think that it could kind of work both ways. If you can imagine, we want to expand our UGB someday for more housing land, and somebody can make the argument that, well, you have plenty of housing supply because you could put fourplexes on all these lots or duplexes on every lot. Really, we can only count a 3% increase based on that. Some other provisions that are in there. So the legislation that required accessory dwelling units to be allowed on every lot was put into place or refined back in 2017. And this new House Bill 2001 legislation added some specific language about, under that legislation, what's required or what's allowed to be reasonable regulations for implementing those ADUs. So those, it specifies that reasonable regulations do not include requiring owner occupancy of one of the two units, or it does not include requiring an additional off-street parking space for ADUs. It does talk about vacation occupancies, though, and it basically exempts those two things I just mentioned, the owner occupancy and the parking, if the ADU or the main house is going to be used as vacation occupancy. So the city of Springfield doesn't regulate vacation occupancies at this point, so that really doesn't impact us. But when we adopted our ADU regulations or updated them more recently, we did put a provision in that requires an additional off-street parking place if they can't have an on-street parking place in front. So there's opportunity to actually count on-street parking. But as of January 1 of this coming year, the city will no longer be able to enforce that requirement to have an additional on-site parking space if it would otherwise be required. And then it's envisioned that with the code update project, we will remove that provision from the code to be consistent with the legislation. Another component of the legislation, so in addition to allowing all these middle housing types, is there's specific direction to the Department of Consumer and Business Services of the state to work with the Building Codes Division on coming up with standards for easing up the regulations on converting an existing single-family home into up to four units. So it's a kind of the equivalent of putting a fourplex on a lot, but it has more to do with the building code side of the internal splitting up and how the firewalls or different utilities and all that infrastructure associated with the structure might work, is my understanding of that part. There is a provision that provides an extension opportunity for deferring the implementation of these middle housing provisions.
Just going back for a moment,
sure.
With the conversion of single family dwellings, mm-hmm. Have they specified if somebody converts, if they have to add additional off-street parking?
They have not. I haven't seen that anywhere.
That
wouldn't come from the building code. That would be through the development code.
Yeah.
So in my mind, there's some connection to the allowance in the legislation that gives the city the opportunity to regulate siding and design, say up to a fourplex, is part of that could be we require on-site parking for a fourplex or even a duplex. But with the provision they added also for ADUs, it said, well, you can't require off-site parking for an ADU. In my mind, it makes me wonder if at some point in the future the state may come down and say, well, it's unreasonable to require a certain amount of off-street parking for up to fourplexes, similar to how we said you can't require off-street parking for an ADU. But that hasn't been put into place as far as I'm aware of at this point.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The extension, though, I was starting to talk about, it's related to infrastructure. So if a city is concerned about not being able to allow these middle housing types in certain areas of their city based on infrastructure capacity, this provision in the legislation gives the city the opportunity to apply for an extension, develop a plan that demonstrates that they have a deficiency and how to remedy that deficiency. This will be one area that there will be rulemaking on to specify exactly how it's going to happen. The one thing that stands out in my mind on this exception or this extension opportunity is that it only applies to specific areas within your city. So unless you can make the case that your entire city or entire residential area of your city has deficient infrastructure, a city's still going to have to adopt the middle housing code provisions to be implemented in the areas that aren't deficient. So it would be kind of a twofold process, I think.
Might perhaps be an entire city or an entire area if, say, the sewage treatment plant was at maximum capacity or nearing so.
Sure, I think that would be possible.
Okay.
You know, go ahead.
I would say if that was the case, then you probably shouldn't be allowing any new single family homes either.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are allowances to establish a moratorium, and there are timelines and plans to get out of that situation that you have to show that you're making diligent progress to address those infrastructure deficiencies while in that moratorium. So I think that's a nuance to keep in mind. You know, are you talking system-wide, or is this really because of the increased density that could happen?
Mm-hmm.
No, the city of Springfield, our engineering division is looking at our sewer master plan right now. So they're keeping this in mind and trying to do some flow analysis and this kind of stuff. So I don't think it's reasonable to assume every single family home lot is going to all of a sudden double the density by adding duplexes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay, some percentage. You know, the percentage that is a minimum that we can count is 3%, but so maybe it's we say, okay, maybe up to 10% of the lots will actually develop with duplexes or some other middle housing type. But to say that 100% of the lots are going to all of a sudden have new density is probably not reasonable. And like the moratorium statutes, this also, like Sandy mentioned, requires a plan to discuss how you're going to remedy the situation, so you eventually have to get there. This, along with the rulemaking process, the state is required by the legislation to come up with a model code of how to implement the middle housing provisions. There will be two model codes. There'll be a version for the medium-sized cities and the large cities. And I didn't really mention this at the beginning, but the difference between what medium-sized cities are required to do and what large cities are required to do are that medium-sized cities only have to implement the duplex provision and allow a duplex on every lot. They don't have to implement the other middle housing type provision in areas. So the large cities have to do both. The medium cities only have to do the duplex provision. Part of the, I guess, requirement of the legislation will be that if cities ignore this or don't do it, that these model codes will then be directly applicable in a city if they don't do their own implementation by the date of, it's June 30th of 2022. So I have a timeline here. This is a timeline from DLCD themselves. Some of the key dates are that the model code that they're required to develop, there's a specific date in the legislation. They have to have that model code done by December 31st of 2020, so by the end of next year. So that would give cities a year and a half from when the state develops the model code to either adopt their own or decide if they want to adopt the model code or some hybrid in there. So this is, you know, the deadline for the state to develop the model development code. And then this is the deadline 18 months later for a city to adopt their own local requirements. And this timeline is actually on the bottom of one of the handouts in your packet. I'd have to double check that. I don't know if it's the same one.
This one here?
There is a timeline in there.
Yes.
Yeah, so it is on the bottom of the timeline, or of the, this is a DLCD handout that they provided to summarize the legislation, and they, that's where that timeline comes from. So I'm going to talk a little bit now about how we see this, the new legislation integrating into our development code update project. This is a list that I'm not going to go through, and this is in your packet memo for today. But these are some of the talking points and key policies that are adopted policies in our comprehensive plan policies that are related to the development code update project. We feel that many of these objectives and existing policies are in line with what the legislation is trying to do. Probably without knowing how it would have all played out if the legislation hadn't come on board, I wouldn't necessarily think we would have gotten as far as the legislation is requiring us in terms of all the middle housing types in all areas. But we were definitely already starting to talk about, you know, duplexes throughout neighborhoods and stuff like that. So, you know, in looking through these policies, I think there's support in what we already have as adopted policies to move in this direction. If there are comprehensive plan policies or other language in the comprehensive plan that needs to be changed or revised or have wording added to the comp plan to implement this, that would be a part of the process at this point. We were initially with the scope for the code update project not contemplating comprehensive plan amendments and being policy neutral, trying to stay within the bounds of what we have adopted today. So it's a little bit of a gray area, and I think in terms of are there going to be revisions to our comp plan or not, I haven't figured that part out yet. I think one of the questions that comes up related to that is the density. So our density ranges for our zones are adopted into our comp plan and our development code. I'll use the low density residential zone as the example. We have a minimum and a maximum density for that zone. It's six units on the minimum side up to 14. Net units per acre, per net acre on the maximum side. And really, that if you try to translate that to a lot size in the low density residential zone, it comes out about a 3,100 square foot lot. So what I've been using as an example is if a developer came in and platted a subdivision with basically 3,100 square foot lots, that would be at our maximum density, but then we would have to allow a duplex on each one of those lots. It would essentially be doubling the density for the zone, but we would have to allow that. So how we deal with that not falling within our density range is something we've been talking about. So we met a couple of planning commissioners as well as two of our city councilors are on the governance committee for this project. We had met with the governance committee twice back, once in August and once in September, and bounced some of these ideas off the governance committee about what to do about the legislation. Should we implement it now? We threw out a couple of ideas. We could not implement it now. And actually, I'm going to just jump ahead to this timeline really quick. So I kind of superimposed what were some of those DLCD or the legislative time mandates from that previous timeline onto our project timeline. And so you can see we're in phase one of the project now, the yellow bars. We're right here today. The model code and the rulemaking process for the legislation, as our timeline originally contemplated, which is this lighter yellow bar kind of dashed in there now, we would have been already adopting our new residential zone changes at the same time that the rules and model code would have come out. And then this is the deadline for when we would have, all cities have to have something in place. So we're out in front of the process for required implementation. So that creates a dynamic of, well, do we want to wait and get some more guidance from the rules and the model code, or do we want to move forward ahead of the guidance from the state or what will come of it? The direction from our governance committee was to go ahead and try and fully implement the legislative principles now into our development code update. It was recognized that we may not get it 100% correct. We may have to come back later and change some things, similar to how we'll have to do a cleanup on the ADU provisions for parking based also on this new legislation. We did contemplate waiting or setting residential aside altogether now and coming back to it, or doing what we would have been doing anyway for residential and then trying to circle back a second time and do residential again to implement House Bill 2001. And again, like I said, they recommended fully implementing it now. We took that recommendation or that direction from the governance committee to our city council just, is it 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago, last week. And they agreed and also supported that direction to fully implement it now.
Commissioner McGinley.
Will you be pursuing funding if you go ahead and try to implement the bill now?
So,
I guess that might even be too late.
Yeah, so why I flip back to this is when they see the grants being available. And this is specific to House Bill 2001. So the legislation did provide some funding for grant, technical assistance grants to cities to help them through this process. It's similar to the grant we already received for technical assistance to help us do our code audit initially, to review our code for clear and objective standards. Basically, we will be out in front of primarily the opportunity to get grant funding for the legislation that I think would help us. We envision being adopted with a revised schedule, which I'll talk about a little more in a minute, about right here, and starting our adoption process right when they open their grant cycle for this. So I'm not sure that the grant money would help us a lot through the adoption process. I think it's envisioned more that it would help you develop the code. So all that to say is, I don't think necessarily we will be seeking grant funding for this legislation. However, the kind of companion legislation to this bill is House Bill 2003, which also has some grant money associated with it. I wasn't necessarily going to talk about House Bill 2003 too much tonight. Sandy is paying a little bit closer attention to House Bill 2003. It's more of the comprehensive planning and the housing needs analysis behind a housing strategy. And I would envision that we more likely would look at grant funding associated with that legislation in the future. So that answers your question.
Yeah.
Do you have thoughts about that?
I mean, I think it's great that the reason we're not applying for it is that we'll have most of the work done. You know, I worry for the communities that will hedge their bets on getting the technical assistance and like wait and then suddenly have a year to implement on their own. So, yeah. think it's great we're doing it.
Yeah. Let's see. So just to talk a little bit more, so I'll open it up for discussion and questions from you. You know, later this evening, I'm going to be asking this body acting as the CCI to approve a couple revisions to the community engagement plan. And part of that, those revisions include a revised timeline. So how we see these now moving forward with fully implementing House Bill 2001 into the existing process, I'll just talk a little bit more about this. So again, these lighter bars with dashes around them were the original project time frame that you adopted as part of the initial community engagement plan. This extended bar and highlighted around red as well, so then this yellow bar as well are the, what we're proposing as new timeline adjusted compared to what was original. So we're proposing the same deadline for getting a draft code done to release to the public for review and beginning our public outreach phase of the housing portion of the project. But we are proposing to extend that phase to double the length from 3 months to 6 months for that public outreach portion, which would then delay the adoption process for the housing phase by 3 months, which then in turn, you know, pushes the where we envision adopting the housing revisions out by 3 months. One thing this will do, it gives us a little bit of overlap from the deadline date when the state will come out with their rules and the model code. If at kind of, this might be the 11th hour or late into the adoption process, but if there's something catastrophic that we missed, we would at least have an opportunity to consider correcting it. But the other part of that is we are working closely with our state partners and trying to be involved as we can with both the rulemaking process and the model code development. We actually, we think we could help be part of the model code for what the state comes up with and try to get it right to the extent we can. And so by being involved with them, hopefully it can be pretty darn close. So the how that affects the rest of the schedule is so that we can go focus on implementation for the housing phase. And also because, as we've talked about briefly, I think we talked back in July about having some difficulty recruiting for the TAC for the commercial and industrial phase, which is this next phase. We're proposing suspending basically our current recruitment for that TAC and relaunching a recruitment effort at the first of the year. So this will give me the next 3 months, basically, to, I guess this bar I should have adjusted, because I guess today, as of today, we're right there at the beginning of the fourth quarter. But it'll give me the next 3 months to focus solely on the housing phase, drafting the code, implementing the new legislative provisions, and then delaying starting the commercial phase till after the first of the year, which is when we will have ideally release the public review draft for the housing portion. And then that trickles down into the third phase. It pushes everything out. By the end, it will have extended the project timeline by 6 months, is what we envisioned. We shortened these up from what was 7.5 months down to just 6 months for these two. Because I think now that we've geared up with the larger project, I think those steps of those future phases could be a little more streamlined. So I'll leave it at that. I'm happy to chat about any of this or answer any questions.
Commissioner Vogts.
I've got a whole bunch of stuff, so I'll just maybe break off one or two at a time.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I would presume that when you initiated the code update project, you didn't anticipate HB 2001.
That's correct.
And you set up a timeline and you were very adamant about staying on pace and staying on track with that timeline. And obviously that's changed.
Correct.
And the question I have is, why wasn't it decided that to do a 2001 project as a separate project and then fold it into the code project? Because normally in a normal year, we have two or three substantial code amendments. And so looking forward, I mean, we had ADUs as a substantial change, cell towers, cluster housing, telecommunications. And looking at the possibility that those changes can occur in the future, you could ultimately completely just throw away a timeline if you're going to be detoured on all these separate projects. So why wasn't HB 2001 not done as a separate project?
So, and there's a couple reasons, I think. I mean, there was a broader discussion amongst, again, the governance committee and staff and ultimately the city council. The one component that I kind of mentioned already is, in my mind, we were already going to be doing some of the work. We're, again, the policy structure that we're working within is moving us partway down that road already by encouraging more density and integrating more different housing types. I think part of it has to do with staff capacity, and I don't know if Sandy wants to mention that at all. She's recently reported to the city council about our larger work program. But honestly, there's really nobody else to just do a separate House Bill 2001 project and then bring it back together. I'm kind of it. And so since we're already doing this large code update project, I think, this is me speaking, but I think it made sense to just roll it in because we knew it was going to have to be done anyway. I think trying to tack it on to the end would have put us outside of the time parameters that we would have needed to be within. And honestly, I think housing is such a priority right now, and part of the city's broader housing strategy is to create housing that provides options for all income brackets to have choices. I mean, regardless of, I think, where you're at on the kind of the dollar spectrum, if you want to buy a $500,000 house, all you can really buy in Springfield is a single family home. You can't buy a $500,000 townhome or a $500,000 condo or any other kind of $500,000 house other than a detached single-family home. And the same limitation on choice and variety of housing is the same at all points in that spectrum, in my mind, for the most part. So anyway, I think, so the push to try and get a variety of middle housing types has been part of the strategy. And so this is an opportunity to build on that strategy and implement it into our development code update project.
And of course, I take it that part of the issue is that this is a mandated project as opposed to a lot of others where it's as time allows.
Right, that's true.
And the other question is, are you anticipating that the Phase 1 TAC and the Governance Committee are going to be involved in this HB 2001 project?
Yes, definitely.
Even though that wasn't their original charge?
Well, you know, and I pointed out, I think it's in your packet, and if I could just look at the packet for a second. One of the original policies, or I'm sorry, I think it's one of the original objectives. So I'm gonna refer to the community engagement plan, the project objectives. So part one of the edits we're asking the CC&I to approve tonight is to one of the objectives. But one of the original objectives is to comply with mandatory regular requirements. Mm-hmm. We're adding on to that saying, including implementation of House Bill 2001, to be specific. So it is a new mandatory regulatory requirement that wasn't in place when we started. But regardless, one of the objectives of the project was to implement any mandatory requirement. So we see this as one of those, even though it's brand new and wasn't part of the original scope.
Okay, thanks.
Other questions? Commissioner Gill. More discussion. You said it, I was thinking it before you brought it up, but I think it's a really interesting opportunity to work with the LCD on this and to help make it right. And I, working with them in the past, it has been helpful to be a part of the development of that. And you do get a lot of technical assistance that's free from them. So I appreciate the decision of the governance committee and the city council on moving forward and incorporating that. I think it absolutely makes sense to do that. I also appreciate scooching the timeline so you have time to write this stuff up, which, you know, it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And I agree, it's a critical thing. Housing is a critical thing. We know this community cares about it. And it's a real opportunity to do some good work. So I think I'm supportive. I think it's exciting, actually.
Mr. McKinley.
I said this before in the governance committee, but I think about it like every day. Like, I'm so proud to be a Springfield resident right now because we are ahead of the game on this. We're ahead of the game on ADUs, and we're going to act as an example to other cities in Oregon. And to just like be confident and comply, I think, is setting such a precedent. And it's an exciting time for planning, but I just so appreciate like the confidence of the staff and just getting ready to go. And yeah, Springfield proud.
Thanks. Mr. Vogt?
Okay. Mentioned in the report is a housing production survey. Now, that's a survey I presume that the city undertakes, and is that submitted to the LCDC?
And so I think that's in relation to House Bill 2003.
Oh, okay.
And I may be wrong on that. And I think there's two things. So there is a survey, but I think there's also what's required through House Bill 2003 is a housing production strategy that will be required of the city. And again, so this is a whole separate thing of, and I think I have some slides on House Bill 2003. I prepared this PowerPoint in anticipation of another PowerPoint I have to give later in the week as well. Reporting to the Springfield City Club on the legislation, and it's more broadly talking about both bills. But are you aware of the survey language?
I'm not remembering of the survey in particular.
I'm seeing some stuff under HB 2003 under attachment 5, page 5 of 11, that really begins talking about that survey.
Well, actually,
so no. I think that you're correct, no. Commissioner Vose.
Yeah, I'm seeing it now. It is in House Bill 2001. Yeah. So it's that survey that we do for DLCD annually already.
Right.
So okay. What they've done, so every year, and I'm hoping to get a communication packet out to both the council and the planning commission that would have those results so we get these last ones wrapped up. But anyway, every year we fill out a survey for DLCD that talks about land use approvals, and they're focused on density. And so we put in what the density is that they've applied for, what the density is that they've been approved for. And historically in Springfield, those are the same, and that's pretty much true for other cities around the state. But I think at one point they thought the legislature had this impression that cities were reducing the densities of land use approvals through whatever regulatory review, but that doesn't turn out to be true. And then they want to know what those densities are compared to the densities that are allowed in the zone. So what this production survey is adding to what we have to do is that we have to look specifically now at quantifying how many ADUs and the middle housing types we're doing. Whereas previously it was only decisions that would be like subdivisions or apartment buildings, site plan review. We wouldn't necessarily capture the duplexes and the ADUs in this survey that we submitted. So they want us to capture those and also look at what they did add last biennium is the subsidized housing. So we'll have to continue to do that and compare that with the market rate.
Well, yeah, that's a list on, it's attachment 5, page 8 of 11. It's pretty, a pretty substantial list for the inventory.
That's going to be part of the state's monitoring, is this survey, mm-hmm. as well as updated code language?
And it is. So we already, I'm actually trying to finish this report for last year right now. So it's already part of their monitoring that we do every year, as Sandy said. So I think this piece of legislation just added on to breaking out some different categories and counting some things we hadn't counted in the past. Previously, it was only things that were a land use decision or approved through a discretionary process. So as Sandy said, our ADUs primarily are non-discretionary. They're just a kind of a permit. They're a clear and objective review, ministerial review. So it is just quantifying more housing units that are getting built that we're not counting now. So it's not a new reporting requirement.
I had the impression it was ongoing. So
yeah.
I just didn't remember them calling it that, but as I'm reading it, that's what it is.
It confused me for a second because there is the housing production strategies that are required as House Bill 2003, mm-hmm. which is a separate, much bigger even effort that is new and will be have to be figured out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that inventory section also has some strategies and some benchmarks built into it as well, it seemed to me.
Well,
ways to implement.
I mean, it touches back on some of the slides that Mark had earlier in terms of trying to encourage these different housing types through SDC mm-hmm. waivers, which is interesting they call that out in the legislation, but or tax incentives and such. And those are also what they're looking at the cities adopting as part of this housing production strategy. So outside of land use, what can you do to encourage the creation of housing?
Commissioner Vogt.
Okay. It's also stated that new housing requirements are not intended to limit single-family construction. But however, won't it? Because you're basically increasing density, whereas normally it'd be single-family becomes multifamily. So aren't you, in a sense, then limiting single-family construction because you're taking away the land base for that construction?
So the legislation is very specific that single-family homes are still allowed.
Right.
So you don't have to build a duplex or any other of the middle housing types. We have to allow it to be built, but the market can decide what actually gets built. So if a developer, you know, plats a subdivision or finds a vacant lot somewhere and they just want to build a single-family home, that's entirely up to them and they can do that. That's still allowed. If the homeowner then buys that home and decides, well, we want to, just like where they could add an ADU today, if they decide they want to convert the garage to a second unit or add a second unit out back or create a duplex or something, then they could do that. Then we're now having to allow that as well. But I think I understand your question. I know there's a lot of concern about existing single-family home neighborhoods, you know, having now multifamily mm-hmm. integrated into them and how that might change the character and those sort of things. So I've also heard kind of anecdotally based on some things that has happened in Portland over the years that, you know, people are buying single-family homes as teardowns to scrape them and build multiple units. And so I think there's some concern about will that be happening and pricing people out of the market for these what might be more entry-level single-family homes that are now seen as more desirable from an investment standpoint because they could scrape it or they might add units in the back. So I don't know if that specifically answers your question. In my mind, it doesn't prevent single-family homes from being built.
It would probably, I mean, considering that multifamily is probably more lucrative for a developer, that they would say, well, let's change our plan here and in lieu of single family, will develop multifamily. And so as a result, the possibilities of naturally creating as spec homes, single family developments would be less likely.
Yeah, it's interesting because, and I have an experience here at the city when early on when I started a couple of years ago, that there were a couple of medium density residential lots platted out, I want to say off like 42nd. And they were platted in order to meet our minimum density for medium density residential, they were had to be duplexes on these lots. And over, and when I was working the front counter, people would want to come in and buy these lots. They were for sale, they were being marketed for sale. And people just wanted to build a single family home on them. And we told them, no, you can't, you have to build a duplex. And you know, I don't actually know if they ever got built, but a lot of people didn't want to buy them because you had to build a duplex. They wanted to just build a single family home. So whether that's, there's just a lot of single family home builders looking for lots and that's what they know how to build, mm-hmm. versus building a duplex is kind of gets into a different market piece. You know, in my mind, the shift will be kind of slow over time as we transition, but that's just anecdotally one example of where people didn't want to build the duplexes on those lots where they could have. Anyway.
But I have to say, I can't imagine a duplex on a 3,100-foot lot.
Yeah, and I don't think that those lots were that small at that point, but you're right. Yeah.
That would be. I mean, it had to be a lot of vertical to it.
Mm-hmm. I'll take this moment and get to you. The one thing I wanted to stress again, we spoke about it at our pre-agenda meeting, but that the initial undefined concept of middle housing being allowed in all areas, although I recognize that there could be some previous code uses of area to mean something else, I think that there's really a reasonable person standard that I think people might be quite surprised if, for instance, it's done by zoning so that it ends up that a lot of that middle housing is built in one area, but it's in the single family zoning throughout, and then other neighborhoods are not affected by it. So I'm kind of thinking that most people will kind of think and be surprised if an area isn't defined more by neighborhood. So, and that I think is a good way to distribute missing middle housing too, is by that it should occur in all neighborhoods as opposed to being sort of marginalized in some areas. So, but at that point it's like, well, how many in an area is acceptable? I mean, if you've got a defined neighborhood, if you have say four duplexes, two triplexes and a fourplex, is that sufficient for that area so that then at that point you could maybe deny additional ones in those areas? Mm-hmm. I think that there's a reasonable standard. I think that undefined area in the law is kind of it's to me it's a little worrisome. Commissioner McGinley is next.
I just also had an anecdote with impacting the construction of single unit detached dwellings. So as one of my internships, I went around and had to interview developers and architects about barriers and development codes to building middle housing. And they actually didn't talk about that many barriers in the code itself, but they said the primary barrier was traditional financing. So right now, just with the market, financing is primarily supporting the construction of detached dwellings. And yeah, that's just one of the things, is it's hard to get funding for cottage clusters and multi-units. So I think the change will also be gradual, but if that helps at all.
I've actually seen that article. It was a good article. I'm just wondering what keeps us from, you know, not having small neighbors, but you know, largely just, you know, from a construction perspective, it's more profitable to build duplexes, triplexes, etc. What keeps that from running away, if you will, that almost becoming policy?
Well, I think it's a different investment strategy. I mean, if you're building single-family homes, you sell it, you've made your money, you move on, you build the next house. whereas the multifamily projects are generally more income-oriented, so you get the rental income over time. So you're not as likely to go build a fourplex and then sell it. If you're building the fourplex, I mean, you could sell it, but it's you're building it typically for that rental income over time. So there's a different motivation and a different tenure involved, and tenure meaning ownership versus renter.
It's interesting.
I also feel not super panicked because I think about the Washburn neighborhood and there are duplexes in there, and there's the hospital that is an apartment, and then there's the little cottage areas. I've lived in some of those buildings. I think it makes for a nice neighborhood. So it doesn't seem, I think if we plan it well, I don't think it has to tear out whole neighborhoods. I would just be shocked if it really tore out whole neighborhoods. And I don't necessarily think that sprinkling that in among a single family residential neighborhood is a bad thing.
I concur.
Where is that hospital again? And that's the old Springfield Hospital.
Yeah, it's on F Street between 9th and 8th.
An interesting part of Springfield history.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about it.
It's a cool old building.
It's a great building. And they're cool little long skinny apartments.
I've never
they're
been
really
in
great.
It, but I've driven by them.
Sandy, am I recalling correctly that you created a middle housing tour of Springfield, like a little walking tour?
We didn't really necessarily create it as a walking tour, but Marisol Cervantes was an intern here, and she created a middle housing booklet, and a lot of the examples are in the Washburn. And it wasn't, I mean, she created this before the bill. Mm-hmm. So what's defined as middle housing isn't exactly the same as what's in the bill, but it still gives you a real flavor for existing examples of middle housing in Springfield.
Mm-hmm. Would you be able to share that with us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's on our, at least it was on our webpage. I'm assuming it's still there. So I can send you all a link.
I would appreciate that.
That'd be interesting.
So much, as Commissioner Gill pointed out, so much of our middle housing was built before World War II, and those are the established neighborhoods we think of now. So I always, every time I walk around the Washburn, find a new middle housing that's pretty sneaky looking. Mm-hmm. It's always fun.
A lot of them are being torn down now too. There was a really interesting World War II housing area in Seattle called Yesler Terrace. It was all these, like, I think they were triplexes, but they were all mid-century modern design and all, flat roofed, big picture windows in them, etc. And they've all been torn down and turned into, I think, high-rise condos.
Well, I was going to say, did they just go to industrial?
High-rise condos.
Hey, Christopher. One more quick question. I appreciate the fact that you included the text of 2001 in our report. What are the highlights, do you know?
They were my highlights for sections that I thought were most applicable. There's some duplicative sections of House Bill 2001, depending on if I think it was House Bill 2003 passed or not. And I actually, in the original version of this highlighted, I got that wrong.
I think that was in 2003.
Oh, I got that backwards. Yeah. But really, so in my mind, it was kind of the sections I was hoping for me to focus on, but also hoping to kind of point to and have you focus on. So you didn't necessarily have to read through all of it, but that's all. It was just my quick highlight.
Well, I thought it was interesting not to read through it all.
So. Okay, good.
Great.
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
I think we have another part of our... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing with you. Yeah, please, go ahead.
Okay, we do have another item later, so I think at this point, unless there's any other pressing questions, we could adjourn the work session and reconvene the Committee for Citizen Involvement.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay, same attendance. And we have an opportunity for public input, but we do not have public testimony, so... at that point, we're ready for our amended community engagement plan for the development code update project across.
I can stop this.
Okay.